Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Welcome, everybody. January 30th. Can you believe we're already last day of the month of January? And you know what? For some reason, I actually started writing 2012 in my checks the first time around. Not that I write that many checks. We don't write checks anymore. So much has changed in the way we go about our financial business, and so much is changing the way we go about the mortgage business. We're going to be talking about some of those changes a little bit later on in the broadcast, talking about the call report. We've got our very own prophet doctor, and also Teresa Casillas is going to be with us, talking about some of the technology aspects about that. They're both with MBS, and they're going to be talking to us about the call report. Stay tuned. You're going to want to dial in on that. It affects all of us, and it's like it's here, whether we want it or not. It's here to stay. So we appreciate you staying tuned all the way through the broadcast, tuning in again this week, listening to all that is going on in the industry, and we appreciate it. Also, a special word of thank you goes out to our sponsors, all of our sponsors, many of which are represented by those on the broadcast, but also a number of sponsors. If you're interested in sponsorship, be sure to email me at dlykken@mbs-team.com. Look forward to talking to you about the opportunity to sponsor. But we're thankful to New Penn Financial, one of our newer sponsors, who's out there with products that just out of agency guidelines. They've expanded debt ratios. They have a jumbo and a super jumbo loan programs, a no mortgage insurance program, an owner-occupied, non-owner-occupied second homes, not non-owner-occupied second homes, non-owner-occupied. I'm reading my notes here too quickly. They have four national loans, interest-only, a host of programs that you just got to check it out. Go over to our website, www.lickitonlending. In the upper right-hand corner, click on the ad, and it'll take you right to New Penn Financial's website. Thank you, New Penn, for being a supporter of us. Obviously, the finance is involved in that, but we thank them very much for being a part of it, buying into the vision of Lickin' on Lending, what we're doing to get the word out about all that's going on. What's going on in the world of interest rates? We have our very own Joe Farr of MBS Quote Line, one of the services, you must have services out there. Joe, what is going on today with MBS prices?
Prices are up again, which is a good thing. We've had several days in a row where MBS prices have improved. They opened up this morning over the weekend. We were expecting to see some resolution of the discussions and negotiations on between Greece and their debt holders, but we left Friday thinking it was imminent and on again, off again during the weekend. Well, I think because it's off right now, at least it's not yet resolved, it created a bit of a flight to safety with stocks being down a little bit and MBS prices being up.
That's interesting, yeah. It's the old flight to quality, and mortgage-backed securities being the quality. So what else do you see going on out there today in the landscape?
Well, this morning, economic announcement, the core PCE was announced. It was indicated a 2%, 2/10 of an increase for the month, and that annualized is an annual rate of up 1.8%. And core PCE, the Fed's always talked about core PCE, and they've always communicated about it, but they have now pegged it essentially to say we're looking at core PCE of 2%. If we're below 2%, in essence, they're saying that that's a license to stimulate, and if they're at or above, they need to reconsider. So At 1.8%, that's an indication that inflation's not a concern for them.
Well, let's get into talking about last week. There was a big drop in mortgage rates, and let's get an update on what happened last week, an overview.
Well, it was all the Fed. You know, at the same time where they take this 2% PCE, they changed their statement somewhat. In the past, they'd said that they were going to hold rates exceptionally low, or the environment would support them holding rates exceptionally low through mid-2013. this meeting, they extended that out to late 2014. And on that news, and basically that news alone, MBS prices gained dramatically on Wednesday, gave some back in the day on Wednesday, but then Thursday followed through and Friday continued to improvement to the point where the 30-year 3.5% mortgage-backed security is at its equal highest point ever in price. And so, yeah, it was a big move on the week. MBS prices improved about 1%, and so it was a very solid movement as it related to the Fed. Also in the Fed statement, Dave, not so much in the minutes, but in the conversation or the press after the press whatever it's called, the Fed
press
chairman,
chatter.
The Fed mentioned that he felt like more MBS purchases may be in the calling, and so that too helped demand for MBS as both low rates, low inflation, and high demand has caused MBS prices to improve fairly dramatically. And you know, it's kind of interesting as just as the Freddie Mac is releasing their average rate survey, their weekly average rate survey comes out on Thursday.
Right.
They declared that there was like a 10 basis point increase in mortgage rates for the week, and it's very misleading at times because it's delayed somewhat. The survey is conducted on Monday and Tuesday of each week, and with the results announced on Thursday, and so all the drop in price or drop in rates occurred on Wednesday. So even though people were reading that MBS mortgage rates were up 10 basis points for the week, they really were down significantly.
I chuckle about that only because if anybody should know the volatility of the markets, it would be Freddie Mac. So doing a rate survey Monday, Tuesday, and releasing on Thursday, it's like that's birdcage material by that point.
Well, it sure is. But that's what everyone reads about. So all the originators out there this was a good week to deal with it. It's more difficult when mortgage rates have moved higher after the announcement because they've then got to explain that. I mean,
well, I also wondered about the G-fee, you know, increase of 10 bips. I mean, if that's starting to, when did that kick in and how does that all affect interest rates out to the street? So.
Well, it's been in there for the longer term locks, and basically, if you're selling to anybody who is not going to be able to get it into a March security, you're having to pay the higher rates. And if you're selling to correspondents, that cutoff is somewhere around the middle of February. So right now, if you were to ask for a 30-day rate or a 30-day lock, you would be if you're selling through a correspondent, you'd be paying more for the higher G fee.
Yeah, that's an explanation. People got to keep that in the back of their mind. So then rates fell Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. What do we got coming up this week? There's some big news on Friday's job report, I understand.
Well, that's always big news, and it's a big driver of mortgage prices. The expectation is for 150,000 jobs. We'll see if that's accurate or not. Earlier, like tomorrow, we have Chicago PMI coming out and consumer confidence, and on Wednesday, the ISM index comes out. And then all week, you know, we're still going to be thinking about and wondering what's happening in Europe. There's a lot going on right now. There's basically a game of poker going on between the governments and the bondholders, and we'll see who wins out. But there is a hope that there'll be some negotiated settlement as it relates to the write down or the principal reduction of the debt and the rate on which the new debt will carry. So, if it happens in a organized way, I think the markets will like that. It's almost to the point where whichever way it happens in Greece and maybe even in Portugal, the markets aren't going to react too terribly, unfavorably as it relates to like stocks and mortgage rates. Wouldn't see a big spike necessarily. Prices, yeah.
Yeah, I heard over the weekend they were talking about 3.5. Greece agreed to 3.5%. So, I mean, it's not a 30-year debt structure. So it's like, wow, they got the same rates as over there. Truly in a global economy, you got to have folks. If you do not have MBS quote line, you got to have it. Stay tuned. Listen to this announcement about it. We appreciate you staying tuned. We've got more just ahead.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Appreciate you tuning in each week and listening to us. It's a great opportunity. Tell others about it. One of the main reasons not the only reason, but a good reason a lot of people listen in is try to stay up on all that's going on in the in the world of the legislature. We certainly have a lot going on. We infamously call it the traffic report, also known as the legislative update, brought to us by our very own and wonderfully special Alice Alvey. Alice, good to have you on the program.
Thanks, Dave. We're, you know, as usual, trying to follow what's going on, at least this time around, with FHA.
You know, I was flying into one of the major airports here a few weeks ago, and I was thinking about you, and I was, you know, a traffic controller, and you have a lot in common. There's a lot of movement out there in the skies, and you're trying to organize it and see which one's going to land, so good job. All right, so let's get into it this week. What do you got?
Well, and also trying to make sure we're focusing on things that, you know, our listeners care about, because I think I get bombarded with, you know, umpteen news articles, and you just don't have time to go through them all. So the things I think right now impact those of us on the origination side, you know, certainly it's interesting when the president mentions mortgage as many times as he did.
In the State of the Union, yeah, no kidding.
You know, you're not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing there, but ultimately a lot of it is going to be about HAMP and modifications and not necessarily something driving for those of us on the origination side, other than some of the enforcement provisions, which I'll get to in a minute. But my main focus, I think, is FHA. You know, FHA published its final rule about the changes in the lender insuring program. And what I want to do is just make sure everybody's got their head around this, because it goes into effect February 24th, so we're less than a month away. It is a final rule, and when you go to the back part of these final rules is where it kind of jumps out, and it'll say, here's how the OMB classifies this rule. And they are saying it's a significant regulatory action. So three quick things. Your indemnification requirements, if you are a good lender, then your practices probably aren't going to change, and you're going to be, you know, essentially operational. You're not going to have to make any huge changes. It's just this thing hanging over your head there that now if HUD says you will indemnify us against this loan, there is no chance to negotiate back. Now, HUD said that, you know, very small percentage, less than 5% of indemnifications actually went through a negotiation process that actually got the lender out of anything. And I found it's interesting in there that on average, over the last 7 years, HUD averages about 1,282 indemnification agreements a year. So for those of you who are wondering, do they audit enough? I don't know. With all that's going on out there, that doesn't sound like a lot of indems. But so, and then the second thing is that the final rule is going to evaluate a lender's performance based on the claim and default rate comparison on the actual area you operate in. So up until now, it was you and the national level. And so now they're saying that it looks like on the current list of approved lenders, there's about 113 lenders that are going to be in trouble with this new comparison. So those of you who might be in that list, go ahead and check. For the most part, it's a neutral impact, especially for those of you who might have only been operating in one state anyway. Lastly, the other big part about this rule is that HUD now has the authority to immediately terminate lender insuring authority. So those of you who have a process in place, you're real good with this, you know that only X percentage of your loans are even going to have to physically get sent into FHA or electronically. It is kind of concerning that they can just say, nope, you're done. You get a 30-day window there where you could respond back, but you know ultimately how that goes. You ever have an argument with HUD before? They win.
Argue with the IRS, yeah.
Right. Well, I should say, I mean, there are plenty of really good attorneys out there who know how to help lenders. We've certainly helped some on some of the less, you know, not at where you need a lawyer case. I'm always careful to know when somebody needs a lawyer. But so certainly there are those who have fought some of the battles. But once you lose your LI authority, you wouldn't be able to reapply for 6 months. Also, they do call, they are going to look at a five-year window. We didn't get any help on that. You know, they didn't reduce that down to a more reasonable 3 years. So it truly is HUD looking at your five-year claim and default rate and what might be an indemnification. So, you know, just a little reminder there, HUD does consider those who submit the loan for insuring as the liable party. A lot of companies out there sell to the aggregators and think that those big companies, oh, they got the problem now, right? They've got it on their insuring
yes.
books. But, you know, heads up, it's not the subsequent holder of the mortgage. It's the person who's the entity who sent it in for insuring, and you really should be treating all your cases as if you'd have to, you know, the old-fashioned way, send a physical file. The other rule people are waiting for is that seller concession. I haven't seen anything yet that's going to cap it. We kept hoping it was going to be 4%, but frankly, the longer I looked at FHA's previous original rule on this, I think it's going to stay at 3. And the way they responded to everything, they kind of go, really good idea, but sorry, we're sticking with ours. And so I'm just really I'm not getting the warm and fuzzies that we're going to get anything above 3%. My heads up to everybody is, watch this proposed rule, or proposed or final. I believe they're going to come out calling it a final, but we'll see. When it comes out, read it carefully. The last time they came out with this proposed rule, they had in the fine print a very big, what I consider to be a typo. They were calling the definition of seller contributions as including anything the lender or the broker contributed. I said,
whoa.
No. Yeah, so, I mean, we've got to watch the phrasing, make sure we're all jumping on that. We jumped on it last time, but just a heads up, it might seem pretty straightforward, you know, change the 6 to a 3, but we always got to read the fine print and make sure they're not slipping something in that's a mistake, right? So I think overall, the last thing I want to give everybody a heads up on is the CFPB's in full swing. We have our new mortgage task force, you know, 55 dedicated attorneys and analysts who are going to be checking for mortgage fraud. We got the Justice Department and HUD forming this new working group. And go out, we now have another new version of the HUD 1 settlement statement at the CFPB website.
Wow.
Yeah, they're
wow.
narrowing it down. The two forms are almost identical. The only difference is the order in which we're presenting information to the customer. So should we show them settlement costs and then tell them what's different, or should we tell them what's different, you know, between the GFE and the HUD, and then show them settlement costs? That's really where we've boiled down to. Check out the forms. We're nearing the home stretch. There'll be one more final version, and then we'll be looking at an implementation date in the coming year, right?
Wow, wow.
I'm sure it'll be after the election, so don't sweat.
Oh, yeah. But the reality is these elections, I mean, it's not going to overturn CFPB, and we're going to be talking about that more. But a lot of these regulations that are in place, Alice, they're not going away. And for those of us
yeah.
who say, well, I'm going to vote Republican, I'm going to get these guys out, the guys that did this to us, blah, blah, blah. The reality is CFPB is not probably going to go away anytime soon. You've got to get to the point. We've got to pay attention to it. And then if anyone watched the State of the Union and you listened to how Obama's comments regarding Cordray and Richard Cordray up there, who's sitting there, God, he looks like he's right out of college. He looks so young. Maybe that's a statement of how old we're getting, how I'm getting,
right.
Alice. But he looked like he was right out of grad school.
He
and going,
does,
oh,
yeah.
no. But,
well, and I think you just have to be aware that even I was trying to look through Republican comments, depending on who you're, you know, no matter who you're for, we're not going to get anything definite on it. But it's really easy for them to say, yeah, we'll just repeal all of Dodd-Frank. And you go, okay, well, that's a lot easier said than done in a campaign promise. So I'd like to see somebody get specific.
Well, it's going to be real interesting. We've got a litigious world we're in, a regulatory world and a litigious world. It's just the fact of the matter. And, folks, we're going to be talking another hot topic here in the hot topic segment in just a few minutes. I'm talking about the call report. Alice is going to help bring us a background to it, and then we're going to have Andy and Teresa talk and bring us full up to speed on it. Alice, thank you so much for bringing us this report. You have yourself, you're going to be on the rest of the program helping us for the rest of it. So stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back after this brief
Looking
break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals and the country. MortgageU has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call MortgageU today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lincoln.
Good to have you back with us, folks. We've got Tony Garitano on the phone. Tony, I want to make sure I got you on. Are you there?
I'm here, Dave. How are you?
Good, good. Tony and I were talking just before the broadcast. He was reading a really important report, and I go, got to get this out on the broadcast. Tony, why is all the emphasis on risk right now? What's your perspective on that?
Well, I mean, you've talked about it on the program before, Dave. I think that we went from a period where underwriting was very loose, and now we're swinging in the other direction, and it doesn't seem to be coming anywhere near the middle anytime soon, unfortunately. So with all of these increased guidelines and increased emphasis on loan quality, lenders are becoming more risk-averse. Lenders are taking longer time frames in evaluating borrowers. Fewer borrowers are getting loans, and it looks like we're going to be in this environment for a while.
I think we are. Sadly, we are going to be here for a bit longer than we ever dreamt of. Are lenders truly more risk averse, do you think?
Well, this brings me back to that report that we were talking about offline, Dave. I think that they truly are more risk averse, and I got this study from CoreLogic that I wanted to share with your listeners. It's the MAR index, which they call the Multifamily Applicant Risk Index. And what it shows is that those people that are renting have much better, higher credit scores. When compared to the fourth quarter of 2010, the MAR index increased 3 points in overall national renter credit quality, which basically leads me to believe that lenders are becoming a lot more risk-averse. They are still risk-averse. And that's causing people who may have better credit scores but still can't qualify for a mortgage to look to the rental market.
I think you're right. I see that as a case. How can technology help lenders eliminate some of the risk from your perspective? You look at a lot of technology. You must have some ideas on that.
I think that we really need to look at data integrity and tracking technology, Dave.
Yeah.
If you can truly see into your process and your process is more data-driven, then you can ferret out risk. But if you're flipping around paper and you're not looking at source data, you're not doing things that allow you visibility and that allow you an audit trail, then how can you monitor risk?
It's very difficult. It's interesting you bring that up because of the next topic, the hot topic segment we're getting into, the call report. It's so data-driven. You garbage in, garbage out. We are seeing the risk go up exponentially. So that's an excellent point. Tony, thank you so much, folks. You can tune in and or listen to or read. In fact, he's got videos up there, lots of great stuff on Progress in Lending website. Go to www.progressinlending.com. Tony has got some wonderful resources, wonderful articles up there. I encourage you to go in and read them. Tony, thanks so much for being on the broadcast, bringing us a quick update on what's going on. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you with us. Talk to you soon.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs.
And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
Folks, we've been talking to you for some time about the call report. It's not something new, but it is certainly something that is going to have an impact on this industry. You know, sometimes it's I don't know, back in my days when I used to go to college, I discovered something called slow gin, started drinking it. I wonder why they called it slow until I drank a bunch of it and going, I think I'm doing pretty fine, and it snuck up and got me. That's kind of what I'm referring to the call report, folks. It's like drinking slow gin. You think you're doing great, and then you wake up going, all of a sudden, I'm in trouble. And, folks, the call report has got some features in it, and that's why we're wanting to take the broadcast, the rest of this broadcast, we're dedicating towards really getting into a talk about the call report, really getting into helping you understand it. And we're going to start at the origin of it, but before we do, I want to introduce our two special guests. No introduction is needed of Andy Schell, the Prophet Doctor, who gives us weekly update on what can help what might be ailing your bottom line, as I like to refer to it. But, Andy, it's good to have you on the broadcast. And then also really good to have Teresa Casillas, who's our CIO, Chief Information Officer, Technology Officer, anything technology, anything operational, systems, processes. Teresa's in the middle of it. It's a great resource, a great addition to our company. We're pleased to have you on the radio, Teresa.
Thank you, Dave, very much.
You can see Teresa's heel marks all the way across the floor as we drag her to the mic today. She is not one that enjoys that, but we're glad to have her here and looking forward to your insights. I want to get into this, and I want to really jump over to Alice, because I think it's important that everyone understand the origins of this whole call report, where it all started. So, Alice, for those of our listeners who may not be familiar with what we're talking about in the call report, would you give them a brief overview of the origin, how this started, when, and kind of cover some of those aspects of it, get a foundation
blade. Yeah, sure. Just briefly here, as you all may know, it came out as a result of the SAFE Act. The final rule was published back in July of 2010, and then we had the registry of the depository loan officers that went into effect then in 2011. So it really was 2011 we first started to file these quarterly reports under the SAFE Act. And ultimately, I think the other note I would tell people is now we have the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau who is over this. Previously, it was the Conference of State Bank Supervisors, but the Dodd-Frank Act transferred authority back last July to the CFPB. So that's our little history lesson to start out.
A little history. Get a good foundation. That's good, Alice. Thank you. Andy, let's get in, and a lot of people go, well, that's the call report. That sounds like the financial reporting. Okay, they kind of get that. They understand. If they've listened a little bit tangentially and not really paid attention, they may not think it really involves them. Andy, who does the call report pertain to? Get us started down. Who should be paying attention to this discussion?
Well, Dave, I think it really boils down to if you're making a mortgage loan to a customer, then you have to deal with the call report. It's very, very basic. Basically,
now,
everybody
has
to do it.
Let that marinate for a minute there. What you're saying is anybody who's involved in making a mortgage loan. Now we're talking about loan officers at that point. You're including them?
Absolutely. It affects loan officers. Loan officer activity has to be included and rolled up into the company reporting. And just as a side note, as we get deeper and deeper into this, as we go forward, let's say you've got a new branch, and that branch provides information into the corporation, and the corporation submits the call report, and that branch origination data for the loan officers was wrong because the originators didn't put the data in right or the processors didn't. The owners of that company can have personal liability because of that error.
Wow.
I mean, it gets to be very, very, very significant. One quick side note, too, Dave, about the call report is that part of the purpose in it is to create a uniform reporting standard. Before, every state had a different way of doing it. Now, there's a unified report. So no matter which state you're in, you file the same report through the NMLS. So that way, that's a good thing. You don't have to worry
that's
about
a good thing, yeah.
Unique state points. But the other thing about it is if you didn't before file a report, you do now.
You do now. There's what do you see as far as Andy is who's submitting this report? Is it usually the CFO? Who within the organization? And if you could get into, and I know there's different kinds of reports. There's a standard report and expand report. If you kind of get into that for our listeners.
Well, we'll start by the who's responsible for the report. If you think about the audit, when you look at the audit of a mortgage company or a commercial bank or any lender, the audit has to be signed off with representation letters from the president and the CFO. The call report has the same level of requirement. It's going to be signed off by and submitted on behalf of the company with responsibility flowing back to the president and the CFO for the complete content being absolutely accurate and not estimated accurate, not we hope it's right accurate, not throw a dart at the wall accurate. I mean, absolutely every detail, every loan out of every branch, every fee collected on every loan, every activity from every pipeline,
wow,
whether if it was approved, rejected, declined, all of that detail has to be captured, pulled together, and reported back through the NMLS that flows down to the states. And the tricky part is this report has gotten a lot of visibility. And so while this report is coming to the states, other federal agencies are looking at it too. I just read an article maybe 6 months ago where the AICPA was talking about that the IRS is hiring new revenue agents to look at the call report to determine any discrepancies or irregularities, because the way the report's put together in total, the regulators are going to be able to determine if the numbers make sense, because we're going to be reporting our loan activity, we're going to look at our pipeline, we're going to be reporting our financial results, where you have to report interest income, interim interest income, fee income, gain on sale income, salaries for secondary marketing, salaries for branches, salaries for originators, salaries for production management. So the regulators are going to be able to take all this data and do some data mining. And they're going to look at the data, and they're going to come back with questions like, why is this so high? Why is that so low? How did this happen? And they're going to come in and start asking questions. And if you can't tie out the information on your report to actual specific detail that happened within your business, then that report's going to be deemed not filed, and you could potentially have your state license suspended on the spot.
Yeah. Now, let's get into some of those consequences. I mean, there's an immense amount of data in this report. I mean, I looked at your webinar slides that you did, and I look at the reports and the amount of detail in there, Andy. It's not something that's just a brief summary report. It gets very, very specific, and it really brings a level of transparency that banks have had to deal with for years. But we as independent mortgage bankers, or those of us that were independent mortgage bankers, you and I have been both a banker and an independent banker and a mortgage banker, there brings a level of detail that's going to make many, many business owners, independent mortgage banking business owners, very, very nervous. And they're going to be nervous because of the consequences. So, Alice, yeah, I'd love to hear you and Andy talk about what are the consequences.
Well, I guess Andy, when you say all that, it's almost as if, you know, the way you're phrasing it, I have a CPA who does my taxes, and so therefore I can sign off on it without, you know, I mean, I know the numbers, obviously, but it almost sounds like you need to make sure you have a qualified professional putting this report together for you.
Absolutely, Alice. I couldn't have said it better myself. That is absolutely correct. You need to make certain whoever is preparing this report understands the content, understands the detail, because I guarantee you when the consequences start rolling back, there's going to be a lot of finger-pointing within that organization, and it's going to be someone other than the clerk bookkeeper who put the report together that's going to get in trouble. This is very serious. We've got to deal with this, and it is a lot of information, as Dave was saying. As we all know, for those of us that are Fannie, Freddie, Ginny, seller, servicer issuers, we've already been filing the MBFRF, and the call report, the expanded version of the call report for the residential mortgage loan activity is similar, as is the financial condition report. But here's the difference, and I wanted to tie this back to what Dave said just a minute ago. With the MBFRF, some of the reporting standards have been, well, you know, as long as it's mostly right, as long as it's kind of close, as long as it's even using estimates, we can get close to what the numbers are. There's been no issue. Here's what's different. As it's been going to Fannie, Freddie, and Ginny, and people have been okay with that. But now, with the call report, even the version that's identical to the MBFRF, you have to use actual detail. You have to be able to tie all of the reported numbers on the report back to actual specific system-generated loan detail, commission-paid detail, salary detail out of your organization. And you can't just make the numbers up. And some companies, believe it or not, have been doing that for the MBFRF. You cannot do that for the call report. And you know, Dave was mentioning about the banks have had to do a lot of reporting before. Well, that's one of the reasons Teresa's on board with us now, is because she spent the last, 20 to 30 years dealing with more a regulated depository environment. And she was most recently at a commercial bank in the Southwest, a big $3 billion multi-state commercial bank, where they had to do all this stuff. And with the CFPB now controlling the banks and the mortgage banks, it's going to be very soon that the technology reporting requirements and the technology management requirements that have been part of a commercial banking environment for years is going to land on a mortgage bank, and that's going to be very different than we've ever seen before. Just hearing Teresa talk about it, and we're going to get into that here in a little bit, makes my eyes roll back in my head. It is really complicated.
I want to go over to Joe in a minute, but I have a couple points that I think we need to bring out. I think the number one is a lot of the auditors, the CPA firms, are going in and doing the annual audits of the company, Andy, are probably doing their homework and studying it. A lot of the reason this is you're teaching a lot of them. You go off to Las Vegas when you have these continuing education classes for CPAs, and you have 100 or more of them sitting in a room there, all the ones that go in and audit these companies. They're learning about this. But here's the deal. They are going to be they're going to go in, and it could be a very interesting audit this year, such as never before, because of this report. And a lot of business owners, the first rude surprise may be, guys, your auditor may be sitting down and says, I can't sign off on your financials because of inconsistencies or errors in your call report. Is that an accurate scenario, Andy?
Absolutely. When we were working with the CPAs who audit mortgage companies, we were teaching a class this past December, and one of the requirements that the auditors have to do is they have to represent to HUD that all reports are filed timely and correctly. Now, and the CPAs know that unless the mortgage company is capturing loan-level data, they're getting the interim interest off the closing statements, accumulating all that information and reporting it correctly, unless they're doing that, then that means the NMLS call report, the financial condition section, can't be right because you don't know the answer, because you don't have the information, because you didn't pull it out of every loan. Unless you have it, you can't have filed the report correctly. And so the auditors are going to be in a real quandary. If they cannot sign off on that opinion stating that everything is complete when they know that it isn't. So that's going to suspend the audit being released. It means that the call report is going to be in question, and it could even jeopardize the HUD approval. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah.
It's very significant. And it's happening right now.
And I think audits are starting. Everyone's ordering up their audit. When are you going to be in here to do the audit? I mean, I think that's the first wave of reality that's going to start settling in on people who may have had a bit of a cavalier attitude or overconfident attitude on it. So I warn our listeners, if you're part of a company, if you're a business owner out there, or if you're listening and you know the business owner well, ask them. Say, boss, are we sure we got this call report down? And if you don't, give Andy a call. Joe, I want to get over to you. You're a fellow CPA, and you're always a guy that sees on the glass half full side of this, so there are some positives in it. Let's get into that, Joe.
Well, I guess before I get into the half full side of it, it does sound like there is much more data to be collected. It's going to be very costly, and there's risk if you do it wrong, right? I mean, all that's part of this. Now, on the other side, it sure seems to me like this is going to make the financial reporting systems and the result of those systems, the actual reports, far more useful, far more accurate, and more than just useful to the regulators. It seems like it ought to be extremely useful for management to analyze profitability of production branches, of personnel in production branches, of secondary. Andy, are you hearing people that are seeing that come out of implementing the requirements of these reports?
Oh, absolutely, Joe. There's no question about that. You know, we've been harping on and teaching loan-level accounting for years and years and years. And one of the reasons that we talk about it is that unless you do that, you won't know your profit per loan, your profit per branch, your margin per product, your profit per originator. You just won't know that information unless you do the loan-level accounting. And if you do the loan-level accounting, then you'll have the information in the right format to be able to prepare the call report. So it's kind of a little bit backwards, but the call report is forcing people to get into loan-level accounting like I think they should have been doing all along. But the benefit of that is KPIs. They're going to be able to get amazing KPIs.
Okay, what KPIs?
Key performance indicators. Key
too many alphabets. Too many letters in our alphabet soup here. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Pajani. I just want to make sure they knew what that was.
You know, around our firm and among our clients, I'm known as Mr. ROI because I'm always talking about ROI. Around our firm, Teresa is known as Miss KPI because she's always talking about and always wanting to generate measurable results. And with the call with loan level accounting, with doing what you have to do for this call report, you're going to be able to have much better reporting. No question about it.
Andy, it goes on even further than that. I think a lot of people, not loan officers, but a lot of production management compensations tied to performance, bottom line performance, and it sure seems like this will drive accuracy to that, to the point where you have fewer discussions about, well, did we really make this or did we really make that, and this is what you're owed.
Exactly right. That's absolutely correct. You know, Joe, both you and I have worked with larger organizations, you with the Temple Inland Lumberman, and I was with B of A. And so we've been with some very large companies that had some very sophisticated systems. And those very sophisticated systems were part of the benefit of that larger company. What we're seeing is that for years, smaller and mid-tier mortgage companies have operated with very ineffective, very incomplete systems. They just, if the loan got sold, everybody's happy. If the investor bought the loan, they looked at how much money they got and said, okay, good, we've got money, we're good to go. But they really didn't go to the next step. So what's ending up happening is that the kind of systems that we saw in the bigger organizations are having to be implemented in the smaller organizations. You just can't survive without it. And that's what's going to be happening more and more is the reality of taking this data, understanding what it means, generating the KPIs, understanding your loan level profitability is going to be essential and key, because how do you know if a branch is profitable unless you have branch profitability reports, and you can't have that without getting the right data.
Well, that's a good opener to get into some of the data talk. Let's get Teresa on the phone. Teresa, it's good to have you joining the broadcast. We always tease Teresa. There's so much information in her, and getting her into a public forum such as this is always a well. Let's just put it that we really appreciate you taking the time and boldly stepping up the mic. Teresa and Andy, if you two could discuss a little bit. You had a webinar here with Campus MBA recently, and you got into talking about some of the components that go into the data, and I think it's so important that if this is a data-driven report, how can lenders prepare for this? What are the systems? Kind of walk us through that whole data topic. If the two of you could just kind of go back and forth and share that discussion with us, it'd be very valuable.
Well, thanks, Dave. It's great to be on the show today. It's better than being back in the server room, I guess, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I know. Yes, Andy and I have been doing a three-part Campus MBA webinar on accounting and really outlining the importance of technology to support really what we call the foundation of data. I mean, we're going over the details of the tools for technology and efficiency and ensuring the data is really understandable and it flows correctly in its reporting. The seminars were really key. I mean, we started out with the basics. We drilled into accounting. We went over the key of internal controls and your GAAP, and, of course, discussing what your audits will be. And last week was on loan-level accounting, taking every field and every system and making sure it's mapped correctly. And it's really the essential for what we call survival and build the foundation for the call report. And as we mentioned earlier, the KPIs, which I think is my nickname. But, yeah, all very key level points to really make sure where all the data stems from. This week is going to be on hedging basics and a hedge accounting. So it's really all fun, Dave. And it's so important when what we covered and what we discussed, the dynamics of rapid change going into how institutions are making their change management, how they're backing up and doing their disaster recoveries, how they are looking at risk and what does it mean to their institutions and really defining where something can go wrong and what you need to do, going over their security and their fraud. Again, with the rapid change in regulations, we have seen what the future could be potentially in the CFPB. There are things that mortgage banks may need to start doing that financial institutions have been reporting all along. It's very important.
I think you bring up a great point because CFPB is not going away. It's going to be here. And if they're now regulating both banks and independent mortgage banking companies, should we think that we're going to be viewed any differently?
I
just absolutely agree with you. Yeah.
Was
that you, Andy, about ready to jump in on this? I want to get to most independent bankers have a QuickBooks accounting system. A lot of people say it's not good. There's A and B great system out there, and there's others. But you know, how are you helping people get the data massaged and entered correctly and tested and all that? So if you guys can just, Andy and Tracy, if you could kind of give us some insights what recommendations you're making.
Well. First off, let me dispel one myth, and that is that QuickBooks can work great as an accounting system for a mortgage bank. It's a matter of accurate data going into the system in a way that is then massaged such that the reporting can generate the right information coming out. Because accounting system is just a great big computer database. That's all it is. As long as it uses debits and credits to move things in and out, but it really is just a great big database. And as long as the information into the database is done well, and as long as the information is massaged and the reports that come out of the database does what it needs to do so you can get the reports, then it doesn't matter if it's A&B, Peachtree, Great Plains, QuickBooks, all of those will work.
So they all work,
including
QuickBooks.
Including QuickBooks.
Yeah.
There's no reason A&B is a great system, but if you're a small lender, you don't need to go spend $20,000 or $30,000 on an accounting system. You can spend $300 on an accounting system and spend a little bit more money with us to get it tuned up, but it's not going to cost it. You don't need to spend huge, huge money if you're only doing, 100 loans a month. You just don't need to yet. You will at some point, but not yet.
Yeah. The key that we're really teaching on, Dave, is that you as your institution know where your original authentic documents are. Follow them through, making sure you understand the timing of them. And then know where your fields are and how it's being used for your employees. And then the key, along with technology and intertwined with that, is every time there are updates or there's changes, is that you're doing a complete system check. You are following your information all the way from how it's being entered and interfaced. All key points.
Let's go back on that just for a second, Dave, if I can.
Because
we think about this as, well, it's in the computer, so it must be right. But we've seen so many times where, when Teresa was talking about source documents, we mean the original lot confirmation, the HUD one, the purchase advice from the investor, the payoff advice from the warehouse lender. Authentic documents are documents that came from an authoritative source, like the investor or your own internal log management system. And then that data, including the LO comp information, has to get into the accounting system. And how it gets in is essential. Just because they're an interface that worked yesterday doesn't mean the interface is still working today.
That's right. Great
You've
point,
got
yeah.
So one of the things you have to do is you have to validate data. And Teresa's got a bunch of stuff on how you go about and validate data. So what are some of the things you do, Teresa, for validating data?
It can be as simple as having your checkpoints of following where it's coming from, as simple as someone in your branch inputting the key information. The things that I'm finding with system nowadays is that there are a lot of rules behind those fields. So it's making sure when you're also doing updates is that you're also taking the rules that people have put in the system. If I'm putting A in this answer, make it B. So always check how your information is flowing and what it's key to ensure there's consistency throughout the whole system. Mm-hmm. So it's rules. I mean, the rules are there, what you put in, and they're changing. So it's more than
some
just the
us,
fields that you're taking. Yes.
Yeah, some of us just are rule adverse, but it can't be. And this, I think that's one of the things that there's a cultural shift taking place here. And Alice talks about it, tries to report on it, but I'm not sure that it really sinks in. It's going to be sinking in, folks, with this. I mean, there is a cultural shift on this. What are some practical, we've just got a few minutes before, just a few moments, I want to cover, what are the practical first steps or anything that you got there, Andy?
Well, let me jump to one quick point, Dave, and that is I want to give people an idea about what this means, that mortgage banks are regulated by the CFPB. I want for Teresa to tell us a little bit about the rules that banks have to follow, that mortgage banks are likely now going to have to follow, that we've never even heard of before.
Right. We had what we call SAR, suspicious activity reporting. We had anti-money laundering. We had the bank security. There are rules for the customer opt-out of their privacy information, of the marketing. Very all-important key that has to be reported. The data has to be flowed up, and there are limits and things that you have to follow. So all important systems and knowing where your risks are and making sure you're accurate. All important.
Now, what was interesting, Dave, is we talked about that customer opt-in, opt-out issue a minute ago. Just now, we talked about it on the webinar last Thursday on the Campus MBA site. And
right.
One of the things that happened was that you may hire a subservicer, and that subservicer is representing you, and you've got to make certain that that subservicer is complying with all the rules, which includes giving the customer to opt out of marketing materials. And they may or may not. We've never checked. We didn't care. But we do now. We've got to understand a whole new set of acronyms, AML, BSA, SAR. We've got a whole new set of rules. I know.
Alphabet
this is coming.
I know.
This is the technology requirements of mortgage banking is about to get stomped on big time.
Yes.
And
yeah.
You better understand what you're getting into.
Oh, and I think it's
even.
Go ahead, Teresa. I'm sorry.
I'll just say even the risk of your systems and your security, the MFA, which is the multi-factor authentication, those are. When you have people are accessing their information online, all important rules that mortgage banks will have to start following, like the financial institutions.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Alice, I want to get into Alice and Joe. They've been quiet through this. We've dominated this part of it. I want to have them jump in with any questions that they might have. Alice?
Well, I think you guys have done a great job of covering it. I think you've set all the high-level stress points and the details and the importance of it. I'm always amazed as to how many companies we see who have given this the responsibility of generating this report to someone just in operations who has no real accounting background, and they're trying to have several people within the operation assemble this report, and somebody just hits send on it.
Oh, brother, that's scary.
Very dangerous.
That's very, very dangerous. Joe?
I was just going to add some of those things that Teresa mentioned, the SARs and many of those reports banks are long familiar with and mortgage companies are not, but they are really difficult in some situations. It's difficult to determine. In SARs, for instance, was there fraud? And things that you might want to indicate was just a misunderstanding should be considered fraud. And so it's not easy to comply. You need to understand it.
Well, it's important, folks. We've got to tune into this. This is not going away, CFPB, whether you love them or hate them or whatever your opinion may be about it. They're not going away. We've got to do with it. And you know what? Like Joe brought up with Andy earlier, there is some real strong benefits, folks, just being involved in getting this right. We appreciate Teresa coming to the microphone and Andy taking the time to share. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you back with us. Appreciate you listening to the broadcast all the way through each and every week, and more importantly, sharing it out with others. Tell others about it. We've grown to have thousands and thousands of listeners across the country, and it's because the word has been passed around virally. In other words, one by one, word of mouth. We appreciate that so much. I am excited about the month of February because, again, I can't believe we're already there, but we are. And we are focusing and dedicating the month of February on Lickin' and Lendin' to talk about loan servicing. And you may go, well, we don't service loans. Well, maybe you should just reconsider that. And that's what we're going to get into. I know, Joe, you're excited about this topic. I want to give you a couple moments to talk about the whole aspect of loan servicing and the value, and then I want to bump to Andy and just tease them, guys, with a little bit of why they should consider servicing today. Joe?
Well, it's an easy question, an easy answer. You're not getting paid much for it. And if you keep it, the intrinsic value or the future value may be far greater than what you're getting paid for today. We talk to people all the time who have been selling service released, and they're just seeing so much additional profit potential or margin to make on the loans that they make by selling the loan and keeping the servicing. And it'll be interesting for those, I think, to hear how people are doing that, how well they're managing that process, and quite frankly, how easy it is to get hooked up with a subservicer.
Andy, you are so near and dear to this topic. You do a lot of financial modeling, explaining financial impact of this. Get into that a little bit, and then also tell the listeners about our guest next week. Very exciting. Austin.
Oh, okay. Well, first off, I think that if someone walks up to you and says, here, I'll give you 30 cents for that dollar in your pocket, and we as mortgage bankers go, oh, really, 30 cents? I get 30 cents now instead of this dollar? I'll do that all day long. How does that make any sense at all? And that's exactly what we're doing.
That's a great point. That's a great analogy.
The other thing about it is, you know, when you get your MSR table from your investor and it says you're getting 2.2 SRP, that is not the real value of that servicing. You're not getting 2.2.
Not even close.
Those aggregators futz around. They reduce the premium and raise the SRP just to make it look like a big number. We just did an analysis for a client, and we're looking at SRPs in the 40 basis points, whereas
wow.
The MSR is more like about 90. So it's big, big, big difference. Next week, Austin Tillman. Austin Tillman and Dave Stevens, they're in Denver, Colorado. Austin is probably one of the smartest guys you talk to when it comes to talking about mortgage servicing. He knows the ins and outs. He knows the capital markets. He knows the trades. His company specializes in hedging servicing. He's the guy. He and Dave go to Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, and they're the ones that are arguing the industry point about the service fee reduction discussion that was going on. They're just really, really brilliant guys, know this business inside and out, and it's just going to be a real delight having him on the show next week.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I think it's going to be so important to get a good foundational knowledge, and I think they're going to be able to give it to us. Joe, you know Austin fairly well, or know of him.
Oh, sure. Yeah, very knowledgeable.
You've heard him. Very knowledgeable. So starting off the week, folks, we're going to starting off the top of the month, next week, next Monday, we're going to have Austin Tillman on here, and he is going to go into it. We're going to then go throughout the whole month. We're bringing together a slate of individuals, guests, special guests, very knowledgeable on this topic, and we're even going to get some people that have moved into servicing and actually hear word of mouth of the guy on the street that's actually started retaining servicing and the value of that. Alice, any thoughts on servicing? You've worked for a number of companies, that, most of which, I believe, retain servicing, did they not?
Yes, we did. And back in the day, servicing reported to me, too.
Oh, that's right.
I still pick up the operational side, so I'll let you guys focus on the numbers because I know operationally it can scare a lot of folks, but we do find a lot of our customers are saying, hey, I might as well keep it. I think I can learn this, and I think I can manage it. So it absolutely is a growing segment of the industry right now, especially for mid-sized lenders.
Well, can't wait to get both the balanced perspective, the financial benefits, and the operational hazards of it. So I appreciate that, Alice. It'll be good. We're looking forward to having you there with us. A special thank you goes out to all of our sponsors who have been there with us through thick and thin. Very excited to be with them. New Penn Financial, again, if you haven't gone out to their website, go to lickinonlending.com. Up in the right-hand corner, go click on that, their ad spot. It'll go right into their programs. Very exciting number of programs that are needed. Again, what's so encouraging about that? You've heard me talk about that. Luminaries behind that operation. Very exciting, and it helps give an indication of the capital that's flowing into our industry. Folks, have a great week. Be sure to tune in next week and be with us as we start the month-long discussion on servicing. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host,
David Licken of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.